You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, How to Turn Your Independent Film into a Money-Making Business by Alex Ferrari. For a free copy of the audiobook, head over to www.filmbizbook.com.
Welcome to the Director Series Podcast, a show dedicated to deconstructing the work of some of cinema's most celebrated and influential film directors. I'm your host, Cameron Bile. Some stories are so perfectly suited to a particular filmmaker that it's inconceivable to think of anyone else sitting behind the camera. Coppola's 1999 debut feature, The Virgin Suicides, is just such a film. A stunning harmony of source matter and artistic vision that immediately announced her as a major new voice. The film was adapted by Coppola herself from the 1993 Jeffrey Eugenides novel of the same name, which spun the nostalgic and melancholy tale of five sisters blossoming into womanhood one fateful suburban summer, hidden away from the world by their overbearing but well-meaning parents. At the sprightly young age of 27, the music video director slash budding fashionista slash art world socialite reportedly hadn't yet considered a feature filmmaking career for herself. But when she was given a copy of The Virgin Suicides by her friend and Sonic Youth frontman Thurston Moore, she knew she had the perfect story with which to make her feature debut. Undeterred by the fact that the book was already in development elsewhere, she went against the advice of her auteur father and wrote her own script anyway. When she presented her draft to the rights holders, they agreed to make her version of the film instead of what they'd been developing on their own. Soon enough, Coppola found herself in the suburban outskirts of Detroit, Michigan, shooting her first feature film with a budget of $6 million and the production oversight of her father Francis's production company, American Zoetrope.
Dad'll smell it on you.
Nah, I got mints.
He'll smell it on your clothes.
I'll just tell him some kids were smoking in the bathroom.
Don't let it die a virgin.
That's gross.
Yeah, grow up, Conley.
The Virgin Suicides is set firmly in the 1970s, but the film's perspective approaches the story from a point of hindsight, narrated in the present day by the curious neighborhood boys at the center of the film.
And so we started to learn about their lives, coming to hold collective memories of times we hadn't experienced. We felt the imprisonment of being a girl, the way it made your mind active and dreamy, and how you ended up knowing what colors went together.
Now grown men with careers and families of their own, they can't help but steal away to quiet corners whenever they're back together, going over their old teenage obsession with the five Lisbon sisters, who all took their own lives in a defiant act of rebellion against their strict parents. James Woods and Kathleen Turner, who played Coppola's older sister in Father Francis' 1986 feature Peggy Sue Got Married, play Mr. and Mrs. Lisbon, an uptight religious couple who fear for their daughter's collective chastity to the point that they are willing to seal them off almost entirely to the outside world. As such, the five sisters have taken on an enigmatic, almost ethereal air that captivates the neighborhood boys. Their focus, and Coppola's, converges on Lux in particular, played by Kirsten Dunst with a flirty, knowing sensuality. This particular summer coincides with Lux's sexual awakening, sparked by a romance with the school stallion Tripp Fontaine, played by a gangly Josh Hartnett in an aloof, cocksure performance. The revelation of said romance causes a crackdown on the girls' freedoms, leading to the mysterious group suicide that will captivate the neighborhood boys' attention for the rest of their lives. The Virgin Suicides places an emphasis on its cast performances in lieu of sweeping turns of narrative, a challenge to which the members of Coppola's cast ably meet, including short cameos from Danny DeVito as a psychiatrist and future Anakin Skywalker Hayden Christensen as a moody member of Tripp's football team. Edward Lachman's cinematography ably evokes the summery, nostalgic vibe that Coppola aims for, and in the process helps to establish the foundations of Coppola's signature aesthetic. Exterior scenes are lathered in warm, saturated tones, golden highlights, and lens flares, while interiors are rendered with pops of bright color against the beige florals of white suburban domesticity. Coppola and Lachman manage to imprint a palpable sensuality on the 35mm film image, imbuing it with a soft, creamy texture not unlike sun-kissed skin. She frames the action primarily in wide, thoughtfully considered compositions, making full use of the 1:66:1 frame while accentuating the potency of her close-ups by virtue of their relative scarcity. The camera work adopts a classical, period-appropriate approach, utilizing dolly moves, lockdown one-offs, and languid traveling shots from the perspective of a car's back seat, something of a signature shot within Coppola's features. Other aspects of the film, however, suggest more of an impressionistic contemporary vibe, seen most visibly in the use of double exposures, 8mm home movie footage, time-lapse photography, and even a present-day documentary-style testimonial from middle-aged, burnt-out Tripp Fontaine. The most effective of these techniques is the staging of key conversations behind closed doors, reinforcing the film's central themes of isolation and secrecy, while subtly placing the audience in the same space of physical remove and unknowable speculation experienced by the male narrators. Production designer Jasna Stefanovic rounds out Coppola and Lachman's approach with scene dressing, props, and costumes that authentically evoke a vintage 70s, yet timeless feel. While Coppola might embrace a subdued application of period iconography, she uses the opportunity afforded by the film's soundtrack to indulge in some iconic 70s-era jams.
Hi, I'm Mona Venture. Hi.
Hi, Tim.
Nice to meet you.
Whereas other 70s set films like Paul Thomas Anderson's Boogie Nights embrace the glitzier disco aspects of the era, The Virgin Suicides explores rock and roll's contributions to the musical landscape. Well-known tracks like Electronic Light Orchestra's Strange Magic, or Heart's Magic Man and Crazy on You, round out a suite of needle drops sourced from artists like Todd Rundgren, Al Green, and the Bee Gees. Like her generational peer Quentin Tarantino, Coppola isn't afraid to abruptly silence a moment of non-diegetic music when she transitions to the next scene with a hard cut. French electronica band Air crafts a laid-back and melancholy mix of xylophones, beat kits, and other synthesized elements into an original cue called Playground Love, serving as the film's de facto theme song while evoking the feel of a languid summer afternoon. The soundtrack works in perfect harmony with Coppola's dreamy aesthetic, establishing her reputation as a filmmaker with a strong ear for sublime music. The mystique of a woman's inner life is a common concept present throughout Coppola's work, perhaps none more so than in The Virgin Suicides, which is literally drenched in it like humidity. Male narrators can't seem to figure out what drives these mysterious young women. Their detached emotionality bears nothing in the way of clues or insight as to how they're really feeling, which is why their dramatic group suicide comes as such a shock. The artifacts of their lives, magazine clippings, records, hairbrushes, become objects worthy of intense scrutiny and study. Their bedrooms become sacred shrines to girlhood. The process of puberty, of flowering into womanhood, is a magical, mysterious phenomenon to these boys. The girls are fully aware of the aura of mystery that envelops them, evidenced early in the film by Cecilia's response to a doctor who asks her why she would attempt something so drastic as suicide.
Obviously, doctor, you've never been a 13-year-old girl.
The quiet, observational femininity that drives Coppola's worldview dovetails nicely with the Virgin Suicide's themes of teenage suburban angst. Like her approach to Lick the Star, Coppola walks the fine line between empathy for her characters and a wider, more sober perspective. The reasons for the girls' group suicide are ultimately trivial, a permanent solution to a temporary problem, but she never discounts the sincerity of the personal stakes that the girls have tied to their situation. When hormones are running rampant, emotions have a life-or-death immediacy, a notion that's amplified in a privileged suburban setting, where there is the time and the luxury to dwell on heartbreak and despair, and true love is the only thing that money can't buy. The punk flair that also ran through Lick the Star surfaces throughout The Virgin Suicides, most visibly in the hand-drawn title treatments, which resemble the daydreaming doodles of a teenage girl's school notebook. Behind the camera, Coppola also adopts her father's tendency to mix work and family, recruiting her brother Roman as the second unit director and bringing on Francis Ford as a producer and on-set source of sage advice. Many directors' first features are plagued by a variety of production difficulties and challenges, especially on the independent level. By most accounts, Coppola's experience on The Virgin Suicides was a relatively smooth one. She proved herself a hard worker and a confident visionary. The biggest challenge she reportedly faced was a shortage of film stock, often hitting the allotted daily maximum by lunch. Her name and American Zoetrope's backing may have played a part in securing a coveted slot at Cannes and Sundance, but the warm critical reviews made it quickly apparent that the film's strengths were entirely a product of her own. The Virgin Suicides' modest success proved that a talent for filmmaking ran in the family, establishing Coppola's feature career with one of the best films of the 1990s and heralding the arrival of one of the most exciting new voices in American independent cinema. Thank you for listening to the Director Series. For a deeper dive into your favorite filmmakers, go to www.directorseries.net. The Director Series is made possible in large part by our generous supporters on Patreon. Please visit us at patreon.com/directorseries to see how your contribution enables the continued production of video essays and text articles on your favorite contemporary and classic film directors. Thank you.